Hey, how you doing? Good. You're listening to the History of Misunderstanding. It's a podcast about movies that are misunderstood, maligned, or simply missed. Pretty sure you're gonna like it. Why don't you take your pants off? That's how I listen.
Oh, yeah. I feel quite ill now. Welcome to A History of Misunderstanding. I am Smokey.
And I'm Stephen.
And how the devil are you, sir?
Glad to be back after this massive gap between
recording. I know, it feels like ages since I've seen you.
I wish it was.
I know. Yes, so happy episode 43.5.
Happy so to you as well.
Happy so to you as well, excellent. And we are once again, dear and valued listeners, rejoined by our wonderful friends and fantastic podcasters, Scott and Charlie from The Stinking Paws. Hello once again, gentlemen.
Greetings.
Hello.
And as excitable as always, we can always rely on them. Well, we had a lot of fun in part one with our hashtag rape movie.
Yes.
Which unfortunately didn't have enough rape to satiate Charlie's need, but there you go.
Lost he needs star rape. Right.
Oh, dearie me. So we can just pretty much swiftly go straight on to recent watches, shall we?
Yes.
I think.
A History of Misunderstanding presents some short reviews.
Okay, let's do a bit of a flip-flop. And after such an absolute corker in the last one, we'll go to Scott first, I think. Recent watch from you, please, sir.
Going to redeem myself a little bit here. We've mentioned on our show and in conversations with you guys, we're part of a collective like-minded cinema fans. It's called Rochester Kino, which is a local group to us down here in Kent. And they're dedicated to screening Hollywood classics and some of the more American modern cult classics, things like that. And one of the things that they do on a Thursday evening or a Monday evening is they take over a screen at the local Odeon and they show classic movie. So we've been responsible for some of the programming of that, and coming up we've got things like Jaws, The Shining, The Wicker Man, Alien, things like that all coming up over the next couple of months. The first in this season, last week, I went and saw on the big screen for the first time the original Terminator.
Oh yes.
Wow.
Now, as a child of the video age, as most of us are, we only would have seen this on the small screen. And to actually get the opportunity to watch it on a full-size multiplex cinema screen with about 90 to 100 other people that were there that night. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I mean, I saw T2 at the cinema and that blew me away, and I know that is your favourite movie or one of your favourite movies, Smokey. But to see the first one just opened it up again for me. Cameron is just absolutely fantastic. It's a shame that things like Avatar came afterwards and Titanic, but when you go back to this early stuff and Aliens, the man was a genius. He had a vision that he seems to have lost a little bit. He's gone a bit wayward, unfortunately. And if he could just recreate some of that magic that he brought back in, was it 84? I think it was. The special effects were a little bit dated, but you don't notice it. It's of its time and you appreciate it because of it. And Arnie's never looked better. He just kicks ass all the way through the film.
It does. It's fantastic. I actually, just a little addition to that, I have actually seen Terminator on the big screen.
You have?
One of our local cinemas did a double bill, this is a few years ago now, of that and Blade Runner.
Oh, wow. Well, I saw that the week before.
Oh. Someone's nicking York Cinema's ideas.
Must be.
But it was a remastered edition of Terminator. And I knew that film so well, so I noticed every sort of extra sound effect or, you know, anything new, basically. And even though I hold Terminator 2 in such a high regard, it just proved to me what an absolute fantastic film the first Terminator is. And as you so rightly say, what a genius Cameron was back in the day before he lost his fucking mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame. I hope he can actually go back and find some of that magic, because I think I read somewhere today the rights to the Terminator franchise reverts back to him in about 4 years' time.
That's right, yeah.
So that could be an opportunity to sort of reboot something that from, you know, the recent reviews of Genesis is not proving too favourable at the moment, unfortunately.
No, I've read very similar things saying that it isn't that great, but I've also read other ones saying that at least it's better than Terminator 3 and Salvation. So.
Yeah, I'm going to see it tomorrow, so I shall let you know what I think.
But you're right about Cameron. Very much lost his way. He has been mining this Avatar thing with his subsequent sequels that are pegged in to come out. And
another three to come.
Yeah, another three to come, and when it wasn't an original thing in the first place, it was actually massive plagiarism.
Yeah. Was it Japanese? Was it Russian? Russian,
yeah. It's these three brothers wrote the books in the 60s, and he just totally ripped them off, and there's only one of them left alive, and he's not bothered about it because he's happy that the story's out there. But yeah, I mean, it's not original concept.
But then the Terminator wasn't an original concept. That was ripped off from an Outer Limits episode.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the new things on this screening that I saw, Smokey. You say you noticed every sound effect and things like that. At the beginning of the credits at the end of this, it acknowledged Harlan Ellison, who was the guy that wrote the two Outer Limits episodes, and that was never and it was never on the video versions that I've ever seen. But it's the first thing that comes up on the credits.
I wonder how much they had to pay him when they finally acknowledged that.
Yeah, but he's on every new print now, apparently that acknowledgement has to be there.
Wow. I'm glad it's there.
That's impressive. I never thought I'd see the day that happened.
But as a film, I think sometimes gets seen as being the poor predecessor to T2 and
different film, different beast.
underappreciated. And like you say, I mean, the special effects sometimes can be questionable because of the day and age and what it was done and things, but I still think it's a brilliant film.
Yeah, I actually got to say that about the special effects, though. Like you were saying, Scott, you can see, you know, for a terminology, you can see the strings, or it can be a bit clunky. But I would refer anyone to watching Terminator and then tell them to watch Terminator 3 when the ridiculous CGI they use. For like when, do you remember when the Terminatrix is smashing Arnie's Terminator into toilets and through the wall?
Yeah.
It looks so rubbery.
Mm.
And I would put the special effects, you know, real life stop motion stuff from the first Terminator against that any day and put it higher.
Well, it's like we've definitely said, and I think I've heard it being said by Scotland and Charles, that it's using CGI can actually overcome limitations that you have within cinema and to create visual effects. But if it's some choice between being able to do it with the reality, animatronics and such like, or just doing it CGI, you can see the difference. And I mean, that's how the original Jurassic Park became such a visual treat, because it mixed the two together made the best, used each one of them in the best possible way without just going, oh, we'll just CGI it all.
Yeah.
They actually used puppets
and shit like that.
And I think that's one of the few things that's been said about the recent Jurassic World is that they've actually returned to that a little bit rather than just CGIing it all.
Yeah.
As we know, and the same with up and coming in episode 7 of Dark World as well. That's something they're doing there. They're using CGI, but they're also trying to use practical effects where they can.
Yeah.
Because it does get noticed, and it is one of the strengths of the original trilogy of Star Wars, that this practical effects. So
there's a lot to be said for it.
So, you know, if that's something that can be returned to with Terminator franchise, then great. And if not, you can just completely ignore anything beyond Terminator and T2.
Oh, that's excellent. Did you rate it, Scott?
Oh, it's a 5 out of 5 and a 10 out of 10, mate, obviously.
Well said. I would have said, let me think. I would have given it probably an 8 or 9, I think, but it would have been 8 or 9 lost iguanas, I think I would have gone for.
Lost iguanas.
You can't find a Mr. Pugsley disappears.
That's right, yeah.
Poor Mr. Pugsley.
Maybe he returns in the movie.
He returns in Genesis.
Yeah. No, he gets a 10 out of 10 because of the whole big screen experience as well, I think, for me, actually seeing it, you know, in that format. So, and with watching Genesis tomorrow, hopefully it's going to knock San Andreas off as my position as movie of the year.
Fair enough. Do you only go movies of the year that you've seen in cinema?
Yeah, we had this sort of conversation when we did our top three at Christmas last year, that we were going to do a top three cinema watches, but then we're also going to do first time watches as well, which we never got round to. That might be something we'll look at again this year. We'll do like a discoveries top three or something, you know, a first time watch of, you know, the movies we've watched for the show, perhaps.
I think there's merit to that, because you could very easily just do a top three of films that are actually released in this year, and then a top three films that you've watched otherwise that are from previous years. Mm-hmm. But doing it that way that you're talking about, I think, gives you a more variety of scope in there, to be honest. And I think that would actually provide a better list from each side.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, if we go sort of like last year, when our combined film of the year was Matter of Life and Death.
Yeah.
Which I'd never seen before. So that was, you know, but it, you know, released however long ago it was, 50 or 60 years ago. And that was my, yeah, best film I watched that year. But like, if it was a film from that exact year, then I think I mentioned on the show, you know, Calvary.
Yeah.
Last year, the Brendan Gleeson one, I thought was the film of the year last year. I thought it was an absolutely stunning film, but yeah, but it's tricky, isn't it? Especially when you're like us and you watch so many films every year.
Yeah, it is difficult, but yeah, we're looking at doing another sort of top three or a top five or something for the, you know, the pre-Christmas show this year. So.
Excellent.
I know you're conscious of not doing a show that's too long.
No. We keep them short and sweet, as you know. So.
I think you've trimmed them down a lot, so I don't listen to him. But I will
bite-sized thinking.
Bite-sized thinking points. I like it. But that's Charlie already, wasn't it? So I will just say though, quick addition to that is you've got to let me know when you're showing Jaws, because I really think I might have to get on a train and come and see you.
I think it's within the next couple of months, actually. August. I think it's August. I'll let you know.
Please do, because I'm seriously considering that already.
I mean, it's got to be in the summer, ideally. You show Jaws in the winter, there's something about it just doesn't have that same effect, as amazing a film as it is.
Well, it was the first real summer blockbuster, wasn't it?
True.
So it should be a summer thing.
Well, it'd be like watching The Thing in summer. That doesn't work. You have to watch it in winter.
Yes.
It's set in Antarctica, for Christ's sake.
Yep.
There you go, then. Excellent. But thank you very much for that, Scott. So, Stephen, what is your next recent watch?
Well, it is a cinema watch.
Oh.
By my protestation that I don't like going to cinema.
You don't?
Somebody keep taking me and paying for it. thank you, Joe. Like Scotland will appreciate for saying he's been watching things on his big home cinema setup, and that sometimes you can watch things on a smaller screen in an actual cinema now.
Yeah.
I went to what you've mentioned before, the smallest screen in the
in the world.
in the local cinema.
Yeah, it's about, 40 seats, and the screen's about 6 by 12 or something like that.
So I went to see Mr. Holmes.
Oh, excellent.
Stars Ian McKellen, Laura Linley, and Milo Parker. It might be Milo.
Fair enough.
Always the best way to pronounce it. I went into it not completely knowing what to expect.
You knew the basic premise, sure.
I knew it was about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And his
dotage,
as it were. But I didn't have an awareness of the plot. And I think from some of the brief reviews I've seen of it, which I've tried to avoid, but I think there was some expectation from some people that it was going to be him following a new case and coming out of retirement for that, and the sort of thrills and deduction that you get with that, which it isn't. Although there's deduction in there and the retrospective review of what was his last case, it's very much framed along his old age and his losing his memory and him trying to remind himself of these elements.
Yeah.
But it's a character study of an oldest Sherlock Holmes and then his relationship with his housekeeper and the son, and then actually transferring that through to his previous experiences with lost love and superbly acted by the principal. Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, that McKellen bloke can act.
He's going to do all right, isn't
he? Yeah. And to be honest, I don't know how much he gave a guidance to the young lad, Milo Parker, but he really does do an excellent job of it as well. You know, obviously you get some child actors who are completely precocious and you just want to slap them.
Oh, yes.
But this young lad really excels, and he doesn't get played off the screen by the strength bombs from McKellen. He actually accentuates it brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how the dynamic is working incredibly well between the two of them. The story, obviously European pacing, that takes a certain amount of time to get through, and it does go backwards and forwards in time frame because of him remembering the past. But I think as a film, the character study part of it actually, it is a great envelope, and it impressed me a lot more than I expected it to.
Brilliant.
It's not necessarily to the level where it's a film that I think people have to go out to the cinema and see, because of the type of film it is, you can easily enjoy it watching on the small screen.
Yeah.
But I would recommend people actually hunt it out on a streaming service when it eventually gets there, because the strength of the performances alone makes it worthwhile to actually search out. But it actually does have an engaging plot, which just unravels slowly, and at the end of it, a lot of the bits have to actually tied up.
Yeah.
And actually shows that there's quality there as well, rather than it being disjointed.
Excellent. I remember seeing the premise for this about a year ago, and saying that McKellen was doing it, and I must admit, it really piqued my interest. I really wanted to give it a try. So I'm Glad it sounds that good. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself.
Oh, good.
Well done. Okay, we go over to Charlie. Charlie, what was your recent watch?
Okay, so one of the films that I watched recently that I found really quite interesting was an early 70s film called The Parallax View, directed by Alan J. Pakula. And it was kind of inspired not only because Scott and I went to watch Clue on the big screen up in Leicester Square, but also because I've just been watching a lot of these sort of quite conspirational, procedural sort of 70s films at the moment. And that seemed to be right up there in terms of what people were recommending. And yeah, it was really quite enjoyable. It's weirdly first Warren Beatty film I've ever actually seen.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. We're coming around to Bonnie and Clyde eventually.
You've never seen Dick Tracy?
I haven't actually.
It's quite well done.
Up in it as well, isn't it? So
yeah.
He's seen Tracy and Dick, the porn version.
And Dustin Hoffman, I think.
Right, okay. yeah, so.
See Madonna's nipple.
it was. I've totally lost my train of thought now. I'm thinking about that.
Sorry, Charles.
Mainly.
Sorry. Tracy. Don't think of Dustin Hoffman's nipple. What are you doing, mate? Carry on, please. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
You're evil.
I've been reading a book recently called Easy Riders and Raging Bulls by Peter Biskin, and Warren Beatty sort of appears in it continually, and I thought I've really got to watch something that he's in, because he's just this major icon of late 60s and 70s cinema, and it was another glaring mission that I had to sort out, really. And yeah, he's pretty good in it. It's an amazingly well shot film. Cinematography from Gordon Willis, who worked with Pakula on Clue, and I think he did the cinematography in The Godfather as well. So visually the film is absolutely stunning, and it kind of falls into that category of being something that you can watch for a couple of hours that you don't need to think too much about and just be really entertained by.
Outstanding. I must admit, I recognise the name, but I've never seen it, but it does sound interesting though.
It's kind of like the plot is basically certain politicians are being assassinated in America, and it's Warren Beatty's job as a journalist to try and get the scoop on the conspiracy behind it. It sort of sounds a lot more dry and sort of procedural than it actually is. It moves at quite a fast pace, and I would recommend it to people, certainly.
It, just from that very short synopsis that you just gave there, Charlie, that actually sounds strangely a bit like Zodiac.
Right, yeah, I can see the parallel based on what you said about it on the show. But, it's certainly worth a watch. I think it's one of those films that you end up appreciating certain facets about it other than the plot, though. You know, it's not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but it stands up well for an early 70s film, because some of them can be particularly dated, especially if they incorporate elements of action into them.
Outstanding. And a rating for it?
I gave it 4 out of 5. I don't think it's Pakula's best. I also, as well as Clue, I watched the other film in his, what they call the Paranoia Trilogy, which is All the President's Men, which is a lot more slow, but similar in tone in terms of that uncovering a political scandal, really.
Actually saying that, wasn't it you, Scott, who said about All the President's Men that you had to, if you get past the first 10 minutes, then you're okay? Was it you?
No, I was the one that said I watched it too young.
Ah, right, sorry.
Yeah, similar to, I think Stephen pointed out, is it the guys at the film book club that say if you watch the film under the age of 16, you haven't actually seen it?
Yes, I think it was them, yeah, that they came up with this theory, which I think by and large is one I can definitely chime in with.
Yeah.
I think there's some films that you can't properly appreciate at a certain age, and there's also, I think, some films that it's harder to appreciate to actually, once you've watched them, if you haven't actually digested some other cinema.
Yeah.
I think, if you can kind of put them in context in some ways. But yeah, the 16 thing, that's a film book club, and actually it's something that I can be happy to agree with, because I think there's a lot of things that me and you, Scott, did watch at an early age, and particularly with the BBC showing things late night and stuff. I feel like we both experienced that, and there's a lot of things that I can say I've seen, but I don't actually feel I've seen, in the sense that I would be comfortable really talking about on podcast without actually going back and revisiting, because I don't feel I have seen them properly.
Yeah, I'm going to have to with All the President's Men for sure, because I was 15, 16 when I first saw it, and it was just so heavy going and very procedural.
Didn't matter who was out,
boy. they're flying thick and fast tonight, aren't they?
Which one of us is thick and which one of us is fast? I'm not sure.
I think it just shows that he's missed you, Scott.
Exactly.
I have done. He's only about 4 years older than me, so. But he is older than me.
4 years is a long time in podcasting. Yeah.
Some people don't make it that far.
Some people put 4 years of content in 2 years of shows.
Exactly.
But yes, it's one of those films that I'd be interested in actually hearing your opinion of it as well, once you've revisited it.
Yeah, I mean, a prime example last week was, funny enough, it's Matter of Life and Death, which we screened at the Kino a couple of weeks back, and I hadn't seen that for 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and I remember liking it, I remember loving it previously, you know, and just watching it again. As we've said, it's like watching the film for the first time when you go back and revisit, a bit like The Cook, the Thief as well. You know, there was a huge gap in my viewings of that. And it's good to go back and revisit stuff, you know, as much as we've said there's a whole lot of new stuff out there we've got to watch, or there's stuff we've got to catch up on. Go back and rewatch some of this stuff that you saw a long time ago and just reevaluate them. It's certainly worth the while.
Yeah, definitely, especially with Matter and Life or Death, because it's pretty much getting onto a perfect movie in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
Yes, there's a lot to be said for, personally, that my ability to be critical of a film in the sense of finding its positives often, not just being negative about it. My appreciation of film continues to grow exponentially. I mean, I think we all gradually are growing with it, but mine particularly, I feel, is growing, you know, considerably.
Yeah.
I might not, you know, actually be able to express it any better than I ever have been, but within myself, my appreciation for them. And so there's some films I just have to revisit.
Yeah.
But like Scotland says, sometimes it's necessary to actually have the distance between the viewing, so you can actually give it the freshness that it deserves.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. Well, thank you from about 10 minutes ago to Charlie for his review. Thank you very much. So I'll quickly go through my one before we go on to the main watch. I watched
Cruel Intentions 3.
It's not Cruel Intentions 3. No. No, I watched the 2008 film The Secret Life of Bees. Believe it or not. Set in South Carolina in 1964, this is the tale of Lily Owens, a 14-year-old girl who is haunted by the memory of her late mother. Directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood and starring Dakota Fanning, Jennifer Hudson, Queen Latifah, and a few other people you'll recognise now.
Sophie Okindo.
Okinwedo, I think her name, yeah. Yes, she's in there as well. Now, reason I bring this film up, before I get into why I liked it and the rating and whatnot, is that I've made a little discovery, which I hadn't really picked up on about my movie liking habits and things like that.
You like films with black people in?
I like films with racial intolerance in, believe it or not.
Right.
I know, this was a surprise to me. But then I looked
at American History X.
Not so much. No, you'll understand when I explain this. Say Mississippi Burning, The Help, Malcolm X, those kind of ones where you see a positive outcome after some really pretty bad hatred.
Right.
Where I find it uplifting, you know, especially with something like The Help. I think that's a fantastic film, and it uplifts. Mississippi Burning is an absolute classic in my mind, but fuck me, is it depressing. But it's just, and it's great, to see the oppressed minorities, you know, kicking ass, even if they are white. I couldn't give a fuck, it's fine. So this was on a few weeks back, decided to check it out. I'd been reluctant to watch it before, because I'm not really a fan of Dakota Fanning. Dander in War of the Worlds. She was fine in Man on Fire, but that was because she was kidnapped for about 3/4 of the movie and you didn't fucking see it. So again, yeah, that's why I didn't really want to check this out, but I've got to give this little girl credit. She was absolutely fantastic. Very, very good. Another reason why I wanted to bring this up is because Queen Latifah's in it, and she is in the subsequent movie we're about to review, so I thought it would be apt to bring her up now. I've seen Queen Latifah in some absolute shite. Seen her in some alright movies too. Seen her in some good movies. But again, this was something else that occurred to me the other day when we were watching the movie we're about to review. She's really good. I think the woman can act. She's got a very subtle way of acting, I think. But very enjoyable. Anyway, so cut to the chase. It's very sweet, very gentle. I think you could easily show it to a child, and I think it would be quite a vital piece of education. I think it would help if you're raising a Nazi child. This would help with that a little bit. Just to, you know, calm them down on the black violence and shit like that. That'd be fine. As I said, very gentle, and I will, you know, I don't give a fuck, hold my hands up, and it made me cry like a little girl. It was just really sweet, and it focused on the racial intolerance and things like that, but then also how that, you know, back in these days that black and whites could coexist quite happily, and it was all good, nice and fun, as long as you weren't an intolerant little fuckhead. And I just thought, yeah, it's just summarized that really, really well, and I was very, very impressed with it. And I came out with a big smile on my face because it obviously has a big, happy, uplifting ending. Nothing stressful, nothing strenuous. It's a little shy of 2 hours, so it's not going to take up a massive amount of your time. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So it's a high recommend for me. So I'm gonna go there for an 8. It gets an 8 massive fucking honeybees out of 10. Because there's some big fucking bees out there. Do you know? Yeah. So there we go. So I would.
It made you cry, Smokey.
It did.
Did the film wish you happy birthday then? Or...
It did. But then it also called me a cunt afterwards, so it didn't really bother me.
Soz.
It was just, well, what can I say? I'm an emotional man, Charles. It sometimes these things get to me.
It's because it's got a 14-year-old girl in it.
And oh, you can't. How dare you, sir.
It does sound like an interesting film.
It is. It's just, as I said, I do like that kind of, I don't know, it's just, when it is uplifting and it shows you what arseholes white people were back in the day and that some good can come out of bollocks, then yeah. That sounded wrong. I think it can really make a film. And so I've basically said to anyone that I've mentioned this to, if you like The Help, then you'll like this.
Brilliant.
It's that simple, basically, with this film. And so yeah, for very, very enjoyable. Okay. We shall move on to the, what have we been calling it recently? The main meat. The meat that's in Rocky's locker that he's punching. Yes, we shall move on to the main review of the show.
And now, our feature presentation.
So, we move on to the 2006 movie Stranger Than Fiction, directed by Mark Forster. Starring Will Ferrell, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman, Queen Latifah, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. This is an IRS auditor suddenly finds himself the subject of narration only he can hear. Narration that begins to affect his entire life, from his work, to his love interest, to his death. Now, there's two reasons, really, why we picked this one. We like a bit of light on after the shade of previous films. We've
absolutely
done that.
Yeah.
As this is, we didn't mention it, as this is the third in the trilogy of HOM Stinking Paws crossover, this is our want, and this is what we do. A little bit of light. And secondly is that Stephen is pretty much a self-confessed disliker of Mr. Will Ferrell.
I'm a what?
What? A disliker.
I'm a self what?
Confessed.
It's confessed, aren't I?
What did I fucking say? We'll have to break that back later. But yeah, so they're the reasons we are. Now, I had seen this before. I think I'm correct in saying that neither of the Stinking Paws had seen it.
Nope.
That's correct.
Oh, okie dokie. We will start off with Scotland this time. Scott, what did you think of Stranger Than Fiction?
Yeah, first time watch for me, as we say. It was okay. I can't say much more than that. I mean, I'm sure that Will Ferrell was not the hottest Oscar contender that year for this movie. It's billed as a comedy on IMDb. It wasn't belly laugh material. It was just,
no.
It was, you know, just one of those gentle, steady comedies that just plod along to the predictable end. Mm-hmm. If it had been made 20 years earlier, it reminded me of a vehicle that, say, Steve Martin would have been in. It had that sort of... Yeah, can you imagine Steve Martin in that role? It's one of those movies that it had been him and, say, Goldie Hawn.
Yeah.
But then the more I thought about it, he had actually made a movie like that, because he made All of Me with Lily Tomlin, where she takes over his body and he hears her voice as well. So that was probably what I was associating it with. I'm not too sure. The main thing I'm going to say, it done what it set out to do. It just became this gentle, predictable comedy. The main thing I want to pick up on is I was looking forward to the performance of Emma Thompson, who's a bit of a Stinking Paul's favourite because we've reviewed her in Love Actually and Remains of the Day, and she's absolutely fantastic in both of those films. And we've described her as a national treasure. She is... you know, now become something, you know, it's what, sorry?
We agree with that. We're big fans of her as well.
Yeah.
Acting-wise and writing-wise.
And looks-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she was the right person for this role. She didn't come across as this tortured writer with writer's block, suffering all this suffering that she was going through. I don't know if you guys are going to agree with that or not, but I was very disappointed with the Emma Thompson role. Will Ferrell, not a massive fan of. I've seen Elf. I can't remember anything else he's been in. I hated Step Brothers. But Queen Latifah, probably the best actor in the whole of the film. And certain little bits sort of piqued my attention with the wrecking ball coming through the side of the apartment and the use of the kid on the bike and the bus driver I thought was quite interesting and intriguing. But it wasn't anything notable. That's all I can say.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll throw it over to me. I will go next. So as I said, main reason wanted to. I know you said, Scott, that Will Ferrell will never win an Oscar, but I do think this is his best performance I've seen.
Yeah.
I've seen a few more things of him in than you have, by the sounds of it. If you've only seen Elf, then I've definitely seen a few more. I think he was very good. I thought he did what he needed to. It wasn't a stretch, true, but I thought it was fine. It, you know, that was it. The reason I like this film is that, and it occurred to me very much so when I watched it again the other day, it occurred to me that this is American Beauty if it was done by Charlie Kaufman. It's basically, it follows very much the same plot, kind of American Beauty, the same sort of structure, but throws in the sort of the narration, as you know, and then the sort of the happier ending, whereas American Beauty didn't end as happy, obviously, if you have seen that film. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I think it you're right. I don't think I'd call it a comedy. It's definitely a comedy drama. It does have some funny bits in it, but they're definitely not laugh out loud. It's a titterer, I suppose, like Frankie Howard used to say.
No,
titterer's up there, no.
The York lad?
Yeah, yes, he was. But at the end of it all, I really enjoy it. I can see where you're coming from, Scott. It's hard to put my finger on why. I do agree with you that Queen Latifah was fantastic, and I thought Dustin Hoffman was very good with the small amount that he had to do. Really, he didn't have to do very much apart from drink coffee in every scene. But I am going to 100% disagree with you about Emma Thompson.
Okay.
The first time I saw this, I wanted to see, conversely, actually going back to what you were saying, to see if she was going to get nominated for something for this. I thought she was outstanding. I thought she played broken very, very well. And I thought that she nailed this part. There are certain scenes, again, I can't really say them here. I can mention to you them off air what they are because they'll spoil it, but there are certain bits when I just think the sort of the panic and the longing that you see in her eyes and her face, it was just so expressive, and I thought it worked very, very well. The ending a little bit predictable, I'll give you that. It's a bit of a pity that Mrs. Smokey said, she watched it with us, that she thought without spoiling it for anyone who hasn't seen it, the original ending to Emma Thompson's book would have made a better ending for the film. And I probably think I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Instead of the sort of the change that occurs. But overall, I enjoyed it. Again, not going to set the world on fire. It's definitely not a 10 out of 10, but we'll come to ratings later. But yeah, just enjoyable, gentle, easy, nothing special, nothing spectacular. But yeah, it's in the plus column for me. So, Charlie, your review, please, sir.
Okay, I've got quite mixed views on this film. I think there was definitely something in there with a lot of potential. And I think that would have been fulfilled if the movie was a little bit bolder, really. You got the sense that when you were watching it, that certain things were compromised to make it a little bit more commercially viable, even down to the kind of characters that were in the film. So if we're talking about Emma Thompson, I actually think she should have been a different kind of writer, because I don't think it really made a lot of sense that she would be this author who was discussed by literary academics. She came across more as a kind of bestseller writer to me, who writes quite frothy, romantic stuff. And there was this kind of discord in the way that she was talked about in the film. And I think that's a good point from Mrs. Smokey. I think when Dustin Hoffman saying to her that the original ending would have made a better book, I think that's a kind of microcosm of the film itself. I think there's just a lot of compromise that happens here. The whole relationship between Will Ferrell and Maggie Gyllenhaal I found pretty, I want to say, revolting, not, you know, like in visual terms. I think it made it so pure, and I think it made it such a middle of the road film. And there's that particular scene, you know, I won't go into exactly what it is, but you hear, I think it's a Reckless Eric song, isn't it?
Oh yes,
yes. Yeah.
And I just found that really kind of borderline on being sort of like nauseating, to be honest. I think it sort of started being a slave to all those romantic comedy cliches that you get in some really poor films, even though the film as a whole wasn't poor. I think it sold itself short. I think it took a really exciting premise and something fairly original and just made it into something that ultimately will prove to be quite forgettable in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you.
I mean, the cast is actually great. I'm not sure it lives up to potential in that sense either. Interesting that you mentioned Queen Latifah. This is not a criticism of her whatsoever, but I'm not sure the character was fully rendered. I don't think she was fleshed out enough. It seemed like her purpose in the film was never really justified. And I thought it was quite strange that there was someone who was going around actually and helping authors finish their books. I think she said, like, she's helped 20 bestsellers finish their novels. I thought, surely if you had the talent to do that, you'd be an author yourself. But just wasn't totally convinced. Dustin Hoffman and Emma Thompson, they were both like really neurotic. And I think that was another issue I had with the film, that in this film, you're either a character who is totally straight-laced and boring, or you were this like neurotic cliche who scrunches up cigarettes in tissue paper and drinks excessive amounts of coffee. There could have been a little bit more middle ground in that regard, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. They didn't give it enough time to flesh them out. I'll give you that.
But I didn't hate it. No. I think the Will Ferrell thing applies to me as well, and he went up in my estimation after watching this, to be honest.
Excellent. That's great. Okay, so here we go. The big one, the reveal. Stephen, what did you think of Stranger Than Fiction? Great.
How would you feel if I said I loved this film?
I'd be very surprised.
Well, you're not going to be surprised.
Be open-minded, I told you.
I did. I went into it with an open mind. And I'll get onto the review of the actors and actresses later.
Okay.
The plot being around the reality warping aspect with the narrator, as Charles said, is a really good idea. And the nub of that, I think, was wasted on this being taken middle ground, exactly as Charles said. Mm-hmm. If this had been done as a more independent feature that had been done in a different manner, it could have quite well succeeded a lot better. Mm-hmm. If this had been done a bit more in the style of like being John Malkovich or something of it.
That's why I mentioned Charlie Kaufman.
It would have very much succeeded. And even if it had been done as a more sort of independent British feature, it could quite well have excelled better. I feel that the way it was done, as Charles said, it was a wasted opportunity. Mm-hmm. It wasn't devoid of good features in it. I think some of the stylistic points, you know, at the beginning with the overlays and things.
Sort of the writing on the screen.
Which was good, but that wasn't kept up. Obviously, that was a facet of his personality, the main character, Will Ferrell's character, that was being lost. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't enough of it being replaced by his expanding imagination. You know, there's bits in there where you can comment about, you know, that people targeting things that they particularly want to take charge of their lives and go after the things they want were then developed by, you know, seeing them through circles. It was Maggie seen through a circular window and the guitar seen through, you know, through a circular gap, and the woman who became the bus driver circled the newspaper, and the little snippets that you got continually along with the lad with the bike and the woman who became the bus driver, that leading towards the connectivity was an interesting feature, which was done actually quite subtly in a way in that sense. But same as the absence of real life effects in the actual home domains of the writer and their actual character. But I can completely agree with what we've said before about the fact that there was some really good acting talent in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that they were almost universally completely wasted by the characters not being fleshed out enough or them having enough to do. And quite easily that all of the characters could have been played by other people without it making much difference at all. The talent that was being employed wasn't matching the available talent in the people. I think that there are gaps in the plot, how it works as far as the character in the book changes what he's doing in his life, and there's no comment about that or the reason for why he happens to do that, why he changes his life from being this boring everyday mundane. He's not even commented on.
Well, yeah, it does. It's because he knows he's going to die.
But how does he know he's going to die?
Because of the narrator told him.
Is there any self-referencing then that the narrator is therefore referencing in the book that he's aware of the narration? Well, he doesn't. He's saying that's where it falls down, and it could have very well been done with a lot more expertise if that plot development had been put in there as an actual piece to make it work, because otherwise it leaves a gap.
But there's a problem there, though. You can't go too deep into it because it comes too meta. So, I mean, you could. This is another, a bit like, bizarrely, like the last one we reviewed, the Cook Thief, is that if you look hard enough, you scrape beneath all these levels, you can go far too deep with it. And this is no exception. It would become too meta in that, why did she stop narrating for half of the film? Basically, while he went out and made his life better. Okay, it's a failing of the film. As I said, this is not perfect by any means, but you could go too far.
Well, you could do, but then that isn't going too far. That's just quite a basic thing, in my opinion, that there's that gap.
I can't disagree.
And as I say, Emma Thompson, fantastic actress. The character didn't warrant her. Same with Dustin Hoffman. Maggie Gyllenhaal, fine for what she was doing, but I just didn't buy the romance between the two characters. No. Just completely mismatched to the point where it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Dustin Hoffman as well, and underused as far as the character development going. I haven't watched Last Chance Harvey.
Oh, right, okay.
But that came from this film. I'm aware of that Emma Thompson and Dustin Hoffman
talked about it before,
wanted to actually work together.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that when I eventually do see that film, that it's them wanting to work together in a film that actually warrants their talent.
It's a bit of froth, but it's good fun.
Because this doesn't warrant the talent. I mean, Will Ferrell...
here we go. Drum roll.
As Scotland said, if you go back in the past and made this film years ago, it could have been Steve Martin or very much Chevy Chase. As with most of Will Ferrell's roles, you could have had Chevy Chase playing and actually doing a better job of it rather than the one-dimensional portrayal of Chevy Chase that Will Ferrell seems to have made his career out of. He's massively subdued in this to the point where he isn't Will Ferrell, which makes him a lot more palatable because it means he's not really fucking annoying. But it means that they could have put any number of other people in this completely bland role where there's no character to play, and they could have either done it with an equal aptitude or have done it better. So he was completely unnecessary there, and if you like him for what he does, then this is a waste of his talent, if you would call it, because it's not taking advantage of what he usually does, so there's no point in him being in it either. All around, really, I think this, as Charles said, is a massive wasted opportunity and a massive waste of the people's time who actually performed in it.
Wow.
Unfortunately, it wasn't an unenjoyable watch. You could watch there was, like you say, a couple of titters, and you can get to the end of it and you don't massively resent it because it's not been very long watch, and you can go, well, yeah, that was all right. But it really doesn't excel in any of the areas. It becomes very middle of the road and therefore just is lost.
Fair enough. Okie dokie. So we'll have some ratings then, please. Scott, can we have a rating from you, please?
I didn't dislike it. It was enjoyable. It passed a good couple of hours. I didn't hate the film at all. But on your rating system, guys, I'm going to give it 6 cups of coffee out of 10.
Fair enough. Charlie, can we have yours, please?
Okay. Like, the philosophical sort of essence of the film was quite uplifting. But as Stephen says, you know, if it really pursued this concept, it could have excelled in a lot of ways. And sometimes I think that wasted potential is a bigger sin than being an out-and-out poor film. So I'm going to give it 6 toothbrush strokes out of 10.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we're all in pretty much agreement. As I said, I enjoy it. It's never going to be in my top 100, I don't think, but I think it's a very nice, easy, fluffy watch. And I like the performances in it pretty much across the board, so I'm a little bit different from you there. But yeah, I'm just going to go a little bit higher than Scott and Charlie, and I'm going to go for 6.5 slow motion views of Maggie Gyllenhaal's tongue on a cookie. Yeah, just make me want to watch Secretary again. So, sir.
Well, like you said, it's not unwatchable, and it actually proves to me that one of your motives in this was trying to prove to me that I could watch a film with Will Ferrell in and not find it unwatchable. And I was able to watch this because Will Ferrell wasn't Will Ferrell in it, and he wasn't really anybody in it. So it's a film which I don't begrudge, and if people get the chance to see it, such as it being on television, then yeah, watch it. But I wouldn't go out of your way for it in any way whatsoever.
Fair play, fair play. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your reviews, gentlemen. I think I like that when there's a sort of symbiosis and we all kind of come out to kind of the same conclusion. It proves that we're not mad. You know what I mean?
Well.
So, but no, the reason I like it is because when Charlie watches Million Dollar Baby and really likes it, we'll just like, no, you're wrong. So, it's fine. Okay. So while Stephen steams and gives me that particular look he always gives me, let's go on to a lovely spirited round of smoky spoilers, shall we?
The British Board of Film Podcasts issues a warning that the following contains film spoilers in the form of cryptic clues and moderate to extreme cussing words. This may include the word flipping and cut. Listener discretion is advised.
So, we now move on to smoky spoilers. But before we do we have any responses to episode 42 spoilers?
We do,
excellent,
yeah.
Excellent. Before we go on to those, we must throw it out there that me and you both got one after we pressed stop on the record.
I was going to say, yes, I got it when I started editing. I got one of yours, mm-hmm. and you got mine.
I got one a day or so later, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so we did manage to get those ones.
We did. Shall we read those ones out? Shall we do it? The one that you eventually got, which was one of mine, which was... in fact, before you say your answer, we'll see if Scotland or Charles got it. So the spoiler was slam poetry, massive heads, comedy butchery, and a woman called Ralph make you question matrimony.
Jesus. still haven't worked it out, and it's one of those ones that, you know, if you don't get it straight away,
first
going to be so far off track with that.
First thing that came to mind was Delicatessen, but I don't think it is.
It's not, I'm afraid, mate, no. Stephen, would you like to reveal what it was?
It was So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Oh, the massive head.
Oh,
the
massive
head. It would have given it away if I'd said head, so I had to bring that one in. But, yeah, and then there was one of yours, which I got with the help of the stinking pot.
Yes. Spacemen spoof and hide to hoodwink masses about Mars mission before disaster dumps them in desert.
Oh, that's one of our early reviews, Charles.
Yep. It is. That's what got me.
You got it, Charlie?
Capricorn 1.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yes.
Excellent. So there was another one that I posted that, that I presented that you didn't get.
Yeah.
Which was, so gentlemen, see if you can get this one up. I'm sure you can. You should leave your mate alone, because you'll just end up in trouble. Fucking his wife, popping eyeballs, and getting buried alive.
Oh, yeah.
Go on, mate, because I ain't got a clue at the moment.
Is it Kill Bill?
It's not, I'm afraid. No, sorry, Charlie.
Sorry.
Wow, no. Fine. I was sure you two would get this. Okay, sir, and you still didn't get it, did you? So we'll need to go over to Twitter. Who got it on Twitter, sir?
Getting that one, we had Bob Like the Bird and Scott, who was formerly of the Good Podcast.
Oh, yes.
But now doing his EDM podcast.
Yeah, yeah. What
and we say? Also had a response for the Capricorn 1 from Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
So Tommy said, I only know the first spoiler, it's Capricorn 1. It's done by the others, though.
Yeah.
Bob Like the Bird, spoofed Mars mission, he says Capricorn 1.
Yep.
And he also managed to get Casino.
Yes.
For the eyeball popping.
It was Casino, oh, gentlemen.
And Scott,
oh, yeah.
And Scott, who was formerly of Good Podcast, he got So I Married an Axe Murderer and Casino.
Excellent.
So, and said good to have us back.
Oh,
so there you go. So,
excellent.
So less responses this time around because we are recording closer to the last release.
We are. I must admit, I'm very surprised, Scott and Charlie. I thought you would have gotten Casino. I really did.
Yes, yeah.
I watched it very recently as well. But yeah, it's just occurred to me when his head's in the vice, isn't it?
That's right, the popping the eyeball, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking Evil Dead.
I was thinking of Daryl Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
Daryl Hannah?
She gets the knife in the eyeball, doesn't she? Or the snake, yeah. Isn't it? Or something, isn't it?
Sure, Roman Firman rips a wise out, or something like that.
Oh, right. Oh, I'm not sure. I will... oh, yes, of course, in Kill Bill. You're right. Sorry, yes. I will say, though, Scott, after I wrote that one and did it on the last episode, I went, apart from the fucking the wife bit, it sounds just like the Evil Dead. I was like, shit. But I didn't put tree rape in it, but there you go. Yeah. So we're going back to rape. What's going on? Right, okay. So we're going to kick off with spoilers this episode, and we're going to start off with, as tradition dictates, we'll start off with Stephen. So can we have your first spoiler?
Excellent ensemble of aristocrats assemble for stately staged historical whodunit, but Butler didn't do it.
Mm. Got it. I think I've got it.
Okay. You've got it? I think I have,
but I'm not 100%, so I'll let Scott know.
Is it Gosford Park?
Tis.
That's what I was going to say.
Tis, yes.
Excellent. Well done. Very good.
Because it's got Helen Mirren.
It does. Ah, is that your...
Like
your
Gambon in it,
theming.
You say?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Scott. Can we have your first one, please, Scott?
Mine are very, very easy, chaps, unfortunately. Let's see. You'll probably get this within about the first two or three words. Broken fingers, a white dove and rain, but only 4 years left to live, depending on which version you watch, of course.
Ah, yes. Shall we say it together?
I've got that. Well, has Charlie got it?
Yes.
Should we all say it together then?
Well, is it Blade?
Oh, right. Well.
Yeah.
Yes. Blade Runner.
It is indeed. Yep.
Okay, here we go. Here's my first one. Okay. Musical aliens promote cannibalism, nighttime fellatio, riding motorbikes indoors, and having a dancing Christopher Biggins round their house.
Got it.
Scott does that?
Yeah, I've got it as well.
Okay, Charlie?
Could you repeat that for me, sorry?
Of course you can. Musical aliens promote cannibalism, nighttime fellatio, riding motorbikes indoors, and having a dancing Christopher Biggins round their house.
Yeah, I've got it and Scott's got it.
Yeah.
See if Charlie gets it.
I haven't got a fucking clue.
Okay, Scott, do you want to give us the answer?
I think it's the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It is, sir. Well done. Did you have that as well, Stephen?
Yeah.
Yep. Excellent. Okay, Charlie, please, your first spoiler.
Okay. Mets fan fondles in public, takes lots of drugs, and pays for fellow sex offenders to go on holiday.
Can you say that again, please, Charlie?
Yeah, of course. Mets fan fondles in public, takes lots of drugs, and pays for fellow sex offenders to go on holiday.
Did you say you've got it, Stephen?
I think so.
Go for it.
Is it One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
It's not, I'm afraid. But I can see where the logic is behind that, actually.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to children amend that shit. I'm trying to do it. Please, I don't care what you say, I'm making it work.
I was right on that one. I will let that go. Damn.
No.
I'm at a loss with that one.
Okay. Are we putting that on Twitter?
I think we'll put this one out on Twitter as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we'll leave people in suspenders. Excellent. Stephen, we'll have your second one, please.
My second easy one. Love lives of London living octet of couplets during December days.
That's one we've reviewed as well.
Yeah, I've got that thing.
Yep.
Oh, dear. Go on, read that one again, Stephen.
Love lives of London living octet of couplets during December days.
No, I'm drawing a blank on that one.
Has it got Emma Thompson in it?
It does, as it happens.
Yeah,
yeah, it has.
It's Love Actually.
Oh, is it?
Go on, chaps, then.
Is it actually that one? Is it?
It is actually Love Actually, isn't it?
Love
Actually. Yes. Okay, Scott, can we have your second, please?
Yeah, this one's probably going to be easier for Charlie. Charlie, keep quiet and let the boys have a go. This one first, mate, because I think you're going to get this.
I was just going to say, the conversation.
Some of us do app in the movie.
Again, this is very easy. As he lays dying, Henry Fonda's last breath is for a mouth organ, placed there by a man named after the instrument.
Is that Easy Rider or... Plant? No.
Magnificent Seven, isn't it?
Henry Fonda is in The Magnificent Seven. No, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, he is indeed, yeah. Harmonica, yeah.
I just I'm trying to remember which...
No. That was teamwork. You said that, and he made me get the answer.
Harmonica, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. Clarity, yeah.
Outstanding. Well, oh, it's me, isn't it?
So I was working towards it, but... Yes.
No, that's good. Okay, we're going to my second one. Okay, here we go. Want to get back to Earth? It's simple. Build a gun from a wheelchair. Drink wearing boxing gloves, dunk facing the wrong way, and suck your mutant son out through a window. I know, it's good, isn't it?
Got it.
Does anyone got need it. To repeat reading?
Can you just repeat that again? I think I've got it.
Okie dokie. Want to get back to Earth? It's simple. Build a gun from a wheelchair, drink wearing boxing gloves, dunk facing the wrong way, and suck your mutant son out through a window.
My first thought was probably wrong now, actually.
Is it something to do with Eric Clapton?
Yes, it's and the documentary. No.
Might need to edit that, chaps.
No. To be perfectly honest to you, Charlie, that's not the worst thing you've said on one of our shows.
Probably not even on this one.
Probably not. Does anyone have an idea?
I'm trying to remember which one it is. My mind's drawing a blank now. It's one of the Alien films.
Ooh.
Because it's Sigourney Weaver dunking the basketball.
Ooh. Shall I help you, mate? Shall I help you?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Resurrection.
I was trying to remember the name of it. Yeah. I knew it was the fourth one. I just couldn't remember
the death. Well done. Yep, very good.
I was just going to say Alien 4.
Very good. It is Alien Resurrection.
It's also known as Alien 4 in territories.
Yeah, but some people call Aliens Alien 2 and they're just fucking wrong, aren't they? Handling that bullshit. So, Charlie, can we have your second spoiler, please?
You certainly can. Nosy Parker steals supergroup's guitar and watches people pretend to play tennis.
Got it.
Sorry, the Skype cut out halfway through. Can we have it again, please?
Of course, yeah. Nosy Parker steals supergroup's guitar and watches people pretending to play tennis.
Oh, no.
Any takers?
I think I know it, mate.
Stephen?
No.
I'm drawing a blank on that one again. But you've got it though, Scotland?
Yeah, only because we've discussed this film recently and I don't think it's fair for me to shout it out. I think this one would be a good one to actually put out on Twitter, but I do know the answer to that.
When you say discuss it recently, do you mean on your show or just in
person? No, just in private.
Oh, good, because I wouldn't want to be accused of not listening to your show. Pretend.
Why did you ask me early on if they'd released one recently?
I said, why have they not released one recently? Pretend to play Senate. No. No, I'm not going to get that, Stephen. No.
I think
you're right, Scotland. I think we'll send that one onto Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we got over 50% there, didn't we? I think between us. Yeah. I think that's a satisfactory round.
And some of it was between us, actually.
It was. Yes, teamwork. It's
me,
all good.
Me and Scott on one of them. Me and you on the other. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
So can't really grumble with that at all. Oh, dear me. Now, before we disappear, Stinking Paws, dear Stinking Paws, would you like to tell our dear and valued listeners, if they don't know, which I'm sure they do, where they can find you?
Charlie, do you want to do that, mate?
Yeah, of course. We're on Facebook and Twitter. If you search for Stinking Paws, we're on there. You can follow us individually if you wish. Scott is on there at Scofie. That's on Twitter. And I'm on there at Fryker with four Y's. So, yeah, we've also got the website, thestinkingpaws.com, that Scott's done a fantastic job putting together. And
I looked at that recently. It is absolutely brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. And, the podcast is available on iTunes.
Before we go, chaps, can we invite you to be guests on a future show?
We're doing a quadrilogy?
Yes, and we have chosen two movies for you in a very brief conversation prior to recording. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, do you want the hard-hitting one first or the palate cleanser?
Cleanser first, hard one after. That's how I like it.
Okay. Your palate cleanser is from 1973, directed by Mr. George Lucas, starring Richard Dreyfuss, Ron Howard. We're going to do American Graffiti.
How bizarre. I recorded that the other night because I've never seen it before.
All right, hold fast on that for a while.
That was about 3 nights ago. How strange. Wow, that's excellent. Okay, yeah, looking forward to it.
I've seen it, but I'm happy to review it.
Mm.
Yeah, that's another one that I watched under the age of 16, so I'm looking forward to that one again.
I did, but I watched it again more recently, and it definitely does fall into that category of one that's not properly appreciated until you're older and have a better ability to appreciate cinema. Yeah. So,
I will hold off on watching it.
So good shout there.
Mm.
Okay, and your next movie is from 2011, directed by Señor Pedro Almodóvar.
Mm. Oh, hello.
Hello.
I think I can guess what it's going to be.
We reviewed this over 2 years ago. It was one of the reviews that has never been broadcast. It was one of the ones we sort of trialled out when we were first starting the podcast. And both Charlie and I have agreed that we want to revisit it. Charlie's second watch, my sort of third. Starring Antonio Banderas. It's The Skin I Live In.
Aha.
I'll give you a brief synopsis just in case you don't know what you're letting yourself in for. A brilliant plastic surgeon, haunted by past tragedies, creates a type of synthetic skin that withstands any kind of damage. His guinea pig, a mysterious and volatile woman who holds the key to his obsession. And there's a lot more to it than that, I promise you.
There certainly is. Have you seen it, Stephen?
No, I know of it, but I've never actually seen it, so that'll be something to look forward to.
To enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, but that's good. That means there's a first-time watch for each of us there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, looking forward to it. Well, just looking forward to being back on the Stinking Pause.
Yeah, looking forward to having you guys. Be great.
Absolutely outstanding. Before we go, we would like to point our listenership in the direction of the hashtag PodPals. We're a member of both our shows, a member of the PodPals group, and we have very many other podcasts who are in that group as well, who are just as, well, almost as wonderful, but just really great fun to listen to. I don't want to sell ourselves short, do I?
Why not? Everybody else does.
Oh, just because we haven't got movie stars on our thing or, you know, getting on the front page of iTunes, we'll get there.
Or organising film festivals.
Organising film festivals, we'll get there. We'll get there, mate. It's all good. It's all good. But yes, please do check out the hashtag PoshPals, kiddies. Anyway, thank you. What?
PoshPals?
Did I do that again? That's the second time I've done that, bollocks. Right, check out whatever the fuck you want on Twitter. Right, episode, what are we on? 43. I've lost it now. All my verve and vigour has gone. Right. Anyway, check us out on hashtag PodPals. But thank you very much for listening to episode 43 of A History of Misunderstanding. I've been Smokey.
And I've been Stephen.
I've been Scott.
I've been Charles.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It was an absolute pleasure again. And no matter what time of the day you're listening to us, dear and valued listeners, I hope you have a kick-ass time.
Take care.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever fucked up more in the outro of the show, ever.
Excellent, that's fine.
Yeah, really, really consoling.